Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. Welcome one and all to the month of May, and more specifically to Monday Football Monday here on the SB Nation NFL Show. A reminder before we keep going that this show is brought to you by DraftKings. DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code SBNFL for a special offer when you sign up. That is code SBNFL only at DraftKings Sportsbook. As noted, this is the SB Nation NFL Show, where we love to talk about the NFL. You can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts, subscribe on Apple devices, Spotify. You can watch us on the SB Nation NFL YouTube channel. And as it is Monday, May 1st, 2023, the 2023 NFL Draft is fresh in the rearview mirror. So we're going to discuss it, winners, losers, all sorts of thoughts. The fantastic Rochelle Privette has us in her ever-loving hands on the ones and twos behind the glass. My name is RJ Ochoa. With me, let's get some introductions out of the way. Fresh, I think, at the Ford Center in Frisco, from SB Nation's Arrowhead Pride, it is the one and only Pete Sweeney. Pete, I see that you are still in the process of moving and therefore green screening it up at this point.
Yes, yes. We are working on the background. I'm trying out different backgrounds. Today here, you could see, for those watching streaming, I'm at the Star. And look, I know the Chiefs called about Mozzie Smith, but we were not going to give up our man. And so we kept Mozzie Smith, and now it's Super Bowl or bust, baby.
Yeah. Do you remember the drone shot that Hard Knocks had when they did the Cowboys 2 years ago?
It was wonderful.
It was awesome. So it happened kind of right where you're seated right now.
I almost get hit. I think they're doing it again.
We're off to such a great start before you ruined it.
Face.
Kind of like the Detroit Lions, Pete. The Detroit Lions had everybody, just foaming at the mouth for them, and then they just peed down their leg. We'll get to it, of course, but here to represent them from SB Nation's Pride of Detroit is Jeremy Reisman. Jeremy, how many fires have you been putting out over the last 96 to 120 hours?
Brad Holmes put them all out on day two when he destroyed the draft, so we're fine.
Okay, coping. Interesting. What do the kids call it? Copium, I guess. You have it, in abundance. I see, Jeremy. So yeah, it's good to see you. Good to see that you've put a smile on, that you're fighting through the pain. We'll of course get to the Lions draft class, but here to talk about the NFL as a whole. I'm sure we're a massive disappointment to him, given that last week he spoke to Lando Norris. It is from SB Nation, the one and only Mark Schofield. Mark, how was your conversation with Lando? The part that you did not write about for SBNation.com that everybody can read. And how do we pale in comparison to him?
You guys are pretty close. I mean, it's very close. You know, three SB Nation NFL writers and one of the 20 people in the world that can drive an F1 car. I mean, it's very comparable. I'm very mad at him, though, because we're recording this on Monday morning. EA just announced F1 23, and Lando's one of the three drivers on the standard edition cover. He didn't tell me that. We talked about the game. I pressed him on why I'm so bad and tried to get him to give me some tips, and he wouldn't do it. I think he's afraid I'm going to see him on the virtual world sometime, but he didn't tell me that. So I'm a little disappointed, but I will say top 10 finish from him this weekend after talking to me. So other F1 drivers, if you're looking to get into the points at an upcoming Grand Prix, I think you know who you need to talk to now.
The last thing, because this is not the SB Nation F1 show, I did tell our collective boss, Michael Kiss, that I felt a calling to Ferrari to kind of pledge my allegiance to a team finally. I told him that a week ago, and lo and behold, Charles Leclerc shows up. I mean, I kind of breathed this into existence, Mark. I'm going to kind of take credit for Charles and the cat.
I'm very curious. And the cat. I'm very curious. What did Michael say when you told him you were going to be a Ferrari fan? Because if the first words out of his mouth weren't why, dear God, why, then I'm going to be very surprised.
So last thing, as we get into the NFL, I said, because I'm still binging Drive to Survive. So my exact message was, a few episodes into season three, you were right. I am in love with all things Ferrari, because Kiss knows me and what a loser I am, Pete and Jeremy. And I'm a sucker for history and things like that. Ferrari, Mark, you can correct me if I'm wrong, kind of the Dallas Cowboys of the F1 world at the moment. So it's kind of right up my alley. So Kiss's exact words, so we're all aware, Buy low, love it. What's nice is you know they're not going anywhere. They'll die like a sick dog in the street before F1 ever gets rid of them. He also said that Vettel is so cool, a point I disagree with at this point in the production, and said it's a shame Ferrari literally drained his life force. So
that sounds like Michael.
Yeah.
And all very accurate.
Mark, the NFL draft is in the books. It did drain all of our life forces, as you can see. What was your favorite pick and why? We'll just start there.
Favorite pick and why? Anthony Richardson at Ford, Indianapolis. And look, you know, I'm going to lean quarterbacks when I chime in with my own draft thoughts, but the absolute parent of coach to player, to prospect, to scheme, to potential, I think is as close to ideal as you can get, because you look at what Shane Steichen did with Jalen Hurts over the past two seasons. You know, two seasons ago was very sort of run first offense, used him a lot in the running game as a runner, as a run threat. And then this past season, obviously they make the run to the Super Bowl. Yes. But you look at how they expanded the passing game, how they adapted the offense to a bigger, wider skill set from Jalen Hurts. It's a proof of concept. So when Chris Ballard, and we all know Jim Irsay had his finger on this as well, decided, look, we need to draft a quarterback, they now have a roadmap to follow to get Anthony Richardson from where he is right now, talented quarterback, but needs some development and needs some growth and needs some time and needs some reps. They have a roadmap to get him to where he needs to be. So I absolutely loved that pick. And look, I was in Lucas Oil the day of his combine workout, and you could feel the conversation shift, like sitting there from, oh, he's maybe like mid first round, like might be QB3, QB4, to this guy could go first overall. Like it changed in the course of like 2 hours. And so to get him where they did, I know he needs work, you know, and it's no sure thing that it happens, but I absolutely love the pairing between coach, player, and scheme and all of that.
I know that we all knew that Bryce Young was going to go first overall, but what did you make of the Texans? And I know there was some smoke about them not taking C.J. Stroud, but not only getting who I think they believe is a viable starting quarterback, but then also getting the most safe defensive pick there too at Will Anderson at 3.
Yeah, Pete, I thought they did a tremendous job. I mean, there was, like you said, there was a lot of smoke in the days leading up to the draft. Actually, like 2 weeks before, it was, I believe Lance Zierlein was the first that came out with a mock that had them going Tyler Wilson at 2. And it was just like, wait a second. You know, it's not like me doing a mock that has that. Lance knows the Texans extremely well. And if he's going out there, others followed, you know, Schefter, Matt Miller, others followed that and sort of said, look, they could go in a different direction at 2. So see them come back and go Stroud, I think makes a lot of sense, because, you know, we'll get to Anderson, like you said, perhaps the safest defensive player in the draft. Stroud probably the safest of the four top quarterbacks, because, you know, there's things to like about all four of the guys, and even the guy that came off to the Detroit Lions. And I wrote about that because I like the Hendon Hooker pick too. But I think the thing with Stroud is there's like the safe double feeling to him, right? And that was an analogy we've seen others throw around, which is sometimes you want to swing for the home run, and Anthony Richardson, probably a home run swing. Stroud's that like safe double off the wall that, like, you know, it's probably not going to go wrong. There's a lot of ways where it can go right. So accurate. And that game against Georgia, where he sort of answered the one big question, which was how he does to do against pressure and can he create outside the pocket, to do it in that, on that stage against that defense, against that team, was extremely impressive. And I loved how sort of self-aware he was at the combine, talking about, yeah, maybe I should have run more and it's something that I regret, but I can do it and I can do it at the next level. So I love that they came back with Stroud. And then to come right back up, you know, we knew Arizona wanted out of 3 badly because they've got a lot that they need to do. Obviously, they've set themselves up, I think, really well for next year with all the picks they'll have in the 24 draft. We knew Arizona wanted to get out. So to see Houston come back up and get Anderson, I mean, those are two cornerstone-type picks. And to get them 2-3, I think they deserve a lot of credit for doing that.
Well, I want to be the polite one on the podcast and offer my condolences for your Boston Bruins, first of all.
I thought we were going to get through this without bringing that up. Whoops.
Wow, Jeremy, that was really, really, really not cool.
No, so. Honestly, though, I respect it. I respect it because when you have 65 wins, when you have 135 points, when you clinch the playoffs in March, a whole month, literally a month ahead of the team that then knocks you out in the first round, you got to own everything that comes to you that next day. And so I respect that.
But let me kind of round out the quarterback conversation here, because obviously Will Levis falling out of the first round entirely was a big story. Two questions. One, are you surprised that there wasn't a team maybe towards the back end of the first round like the Vikings that took a chance there? And did the Titans play it right? I mean, they got an offensive tackle to protect him first and then were able to jump back and get him in the early in the second.
Yeah, I mean, to the first question, you know, I'm old enough to remember Christian Hackenberg, first round buzz. Davis Webb, first round buzz. Davis Mills, first round buzz. Nathan Peterman, Mason Rudolph. Like, we do this every year where it's like, okay, we've got X number of quarterbacks that we know are going in the first round, so we need X plus one. And it was always this philosophical, like, oh, well, just because of the value of the fifth-year option, a team's going to come back and do it. And Jeremy, as you well know, it was Hendon Hooker who was getting that buzz, because there were so many teams at the start of the draft that had to address the quarterback position that we assumed Will Levis would be gone by, say, I don't know, pick 11 to the Tennessee Titans. And so there was this idea that Hooker would be that fifth quarterback. And what made it seemingly more of a viable option this year was because, as you sort of alluded to, there were so many teams in that late teens, early 20s that could also go quarterback. Detroit at 18, Seattle at 20, Minnesota at 23. Like, you had three teams right there that we all sort of connected to quarterbacks at some point throughout this process, including the team in Minnesota that people talked about might come up to three if they liked a quarterback in this draft class. And so with the assumption that Levis was going to be gone, and then, you know, we had these teams that needed a quarterback, we assumed we'd actually get the five, not this nebulous team trading back in. We don't know about, we'll just do it because it'll give us something to write about in the days before the draft. And so I think the fact that we didn't see Levis come off early in the first round and Hooker slid as well was a bit of a surprise. But to see the way the Titans played it, I think they played it extremely well, because we thought they would, you know, do it at 11. They get the tackle at 11, which I think was a very good pick for them. Also a position of need. And then to get Levis where they did, I thought was a very smart move by them. And I think the scheme fit makes sense, because we expect a lot of under center, play action, back to the defense types of drops and throws. That's one of the things that he did particularly well, certainly in 21, when he was under Liam Cohen and played really good football and looked like he might have been QB1 had he come out a draft prior. And so I hats off to Tennessee for that. I thought it was really well done. Again, surprised that we didn't see Levis and Hooker in the first round, but I think both of them might end up panning out because of this, because you don't get the expectations of being a first round pick. You don't get the pressure from the fan bases that will be in our mentions and in the comments, like, you know, Goff threw six incompletions in the first quarter, so it's time to make the move to Hendon Hooker. That might wait till like week four instead of week one.
Mark, I want to talk about a team specifically, and it's a team that I've hated on a little bit this offseason, a team that I threw a lot of flowers at last year. By the way, I'm so happy for Kyle Barber and the addition of Zay Flowers. The Ravens, I feel like, big stock winners over the course of the last week or so. But I feel like big stock losers are the Buffalo Bills. I feel like the Bills did nothing really in free agency. I feel like they were very similar to my Cowboys this past year, and that they had no real offensive weapons outside of Stephon Diggs. I've talked to Jeremy and Pete about this and kind of moaned and groaned about it on Twitter. Okay, cool. They drafted Dalton Kincaid, but like, is that it? Like the AFC is so loaded and stacked, and I just feel like, okay, cool, you landed some interior offensive line help. I just feel like the Bills are letting everybody lap them right now, and they think that their speed is enough to kind of hold up, to kind of go back to the theme of F1. I just feel like the Bills did nothing here. Like, the Bills just existed over the course of the last 5 days.
Yeah, I mean, look, they were in a tough situation going in, you know, because they had some decisions to be made. Tremaine Edmonds, they were up against it from a cap perspective, so they had to sort of do some spring cleaning before even get into the draft. And then, look, you know, there were rumblings about wide receiver at the end of the first round.
And they didn't trade for Hop.
If he fell, they didn't make that trade. You know, maybe we see that at some point. But I think Ken Dorsey wanted a 12 personnel package. Like, that's what he wanted going into last season. That was his dream. OJ Howard, that didn't work out. They couldn't get it figured out. Now with Dalton Kincaid, I think he's got what he wants, at least on paper, from a personnel perspective, because you can go 12. There was all this thought that, like, they got to go receiver. You know, with Knox, with Kincaid, you've got that sort of big slot type. So I think that will work. Getting Osiris Torrance when they did, one of my favorite things about the combine is seeing who stands where in terms of beat reporters. Like, where do the, you know, when Patriots beat reporters were in front of every quarterback's podium, I had a near heart attack out at Indianapolis because I thought something was going to happen that I needed to know about. A lot of Bills reporters were in front of interior offensive linemen. I thought that Osiris Torrance was their pick at the end of the first round. They got him in the second. I thought that was a good move too. And so, you know, is it sort of rutted to stand still? I think when you look around the rest of the AFC, it might feel that way because now you've got Aaron Rodgers in the division. The AFC is loaded top to bottom. I think that they had some spring cleaning to do that they had to take care of first. I do like the first two picks, but they might be good. Good might not be good enough in the AFC next year. And I think to your point, that's the bigger issue.
What did you make of the Patriots draft? Because I think a lot of the smoke heading into the weekend was the fact that they may trade up for a quarterback, which was pretty alarming considering still how young Mac Jones is. And instead, it's the opposite. They go three defensive picks in a row led by Christian Gonzalez. Do you feel like this is the right move? Is this a sign off of we're sticking with Mac Jones?
Yeah, Pete. I mean, I do think that that's the sign off that, look, Mac is going to be our guy. I know Bill O'Brien talked about every position is up for competition. And there's, you know, a growing section of Patriots fans that want Bailey Zappe to win that job. But I think that what they did, you know, I know, look, they met with Levis, at, you know, right at the end of the top 30 window. And that certainly drew a lot of attention. But I do think that this is a sign that we're going to try to get this fixed around Mac Jones and get the best out of Mac Jones because it's year three. Like, this is the do or die year for Mac Jones, because if he can't do it now, they might move on from him. So I think, look, going defense to start made a lot of sense. I love the Christian Gonzalez pick. Like, he was my favorite corner in this class. He just screamed Bill Belichick corner. So, I mean, those of you that were in the Slack on Thursday night saw me, like, ride the roller coaster of, my God, Belichick just traded out of 14 and missed on the chance to draft him. And then, oh my God, they actually got him. So I loved that pick. Now, Keon White fits the sort of Belichick pass rusher mold, so I like that selection as well. And then you get a lot of, like, quintessential Patriots types of picks. Like,
yeah,
you know, they go sort of off the board with some players. They go kicker early when it's the signal to everybody. Like, okay. Like, and that brought up the Justice Mosqueda tweet from, like, 2019 when they traded up for a punter, I think, and Justice was like, Bill Belichick just told everybody to go see your family. Like, the draft's over, everybody. Like, when the Patriots did that, even though I like Ryland, he's a great kicker, he's down the street from me. That was the signal that drafts over, everybody. But quintessential Belichick draft. Gonzalez, I think, was a fantastic pick. White was a good pick for them. Although it comes back to the quarterback, you know. And right now, Mac Jones is QB4 in the East. I think that's a more than fair assessment. And where does he rank in among the AFC quarterbacks at large? Not near the top. So, I mean, They got to figure the Mac part out. If they do, they could compete. If not, Caleb Williams, baby, let's go.
Well, I'm sure RJ's got some thoughts on this, but the Philadelphia Eagles are being hailed by a lot of people as the winners of this draft just by mere drafting every Georgia defender they can find. Do you like their draft class? Do you think it's being maybe a little bit overhyped?
I mean, I do like their draft class, Jeremy. I mean, look, every expectation was Carter was going to be off the board when they were on the clock. So I thought that Nolan Smith might have been the pick for them at 10. And then you wonder what they do at the end of the first round, maybe if Robinson falls, you know, maybe Gibbs, the Alabama running back. So to get Carter at 9, traded up just the one spot, and then to come back with Nolan Smith, I mean, I think, you know, those were two really good moves. I mean, looking down the rest of their draft, like, yeah, you know, you mentioned the sort of, you know, the Georgia comparison there, and you get Kelee Ringo on the 4th, a corner that some people thought might go first round before the season began. You know, I think that's a nice little addition there on day 3. They drafted the players we thought they were going to draft. And I think the fact that they did that makes it feel like a win. You know, there's these rumblings that general managers are like, he's getting so much credit. Like, that's not right. I don't know about that. They drafted the players we thought they were going to draft. So that makes us feel like, hey, we can take some victory laps of our own, because we were saying they were going to draft Jalen Carter. We were saying they were going to draft Nolan Smith. They did it. See, we're just as smart as Howie Roseman. So I think there's some of that at play too, at least from where I'm sitting. Cause like, when you take the victory laps, I mean, when you get the opportunity to do that, you got to take them. So that's what we're doing.
I agree. I think that it is vogue to hail the Eagles, and like, they've earned that. But to your point, Mark, I do think there's some like justification that the football world does, which it turns into elevating them. Like, okay, cool. You drafted a really good player that nobody in front of you drafted. Like, I give them credit for things like trading for DeAndre Swift, like working out, like those are creative things. Yeah. Sorry, Jeremy. But like drafting the good player that fell to you is hardly like the like a level of skill. But
and at the same time, like Jalen Carter, eight teams passed on him.
Right.
You know, Nolan Smith, these teams passed on him. Like, there were probably reasons. Now, maybe for some teams it was, well, we have a bigger need elsewhere, or this is a better fit for us. You know, but there were reasons that those teams, the teams passed on these players. Now it's going to be up to Philadelphia. And, you know, back to the Georgia point of it, you get a bunch of former teammates back together. Like, maybe it all sorts of works out and there's chemistry and, you know, things like that. But general managers passed on these players too. And there might have been reasons to do so with both.
My last one for you, Mark, is I'm kind of back on the Ravens. And some of it is the draft, but some of it is sort of everything. Odell on its own or on his own didn't feel like enough. Getting Lamar done was a big win, obviously, as round one was getting set to start. To land Zay Flowers, like, I feel like the Ravens offense just, like, I mean, it was like Khaleesi walking out of, you know what I mean, like on fire. I'm sort of willing to replace the Bills with the Ravens as far as my AFC team to live, you know, live and die with. I'm all the way back in. I mean, like you talked about, where does Mac Jones rank? Like, where do you see the Ravens offense now that we have been through the draft up against the rest throughout the AFC?
Yeah, I mean, they've certainly improved themselves. I mean, the Odell acquisition, I think, was big for them. Zay Flowers was getting some wide receiver one buzz, so I think he's a nice addition as well. And certainly when you bring Lamar back in, like, that quells the fears because you're wondering what that offense will look like without him, because that's an offense that has basically been built for Lamar over the years, and getting them back is a massive part of that. Are they the team to beat in the AFC? No, they might not even be the team to beat in the division, because certainly what we've seen from the Bengals, I think Cleveland, you know, you can say what you want about what they had to do to acquire the quarterback, but if he takes a step forward in with his latest year in that system, that could certainly work. Pittsburgh, I think, helped themselves. So it's, again, it's a tough AFC, but they certainly improved themselves. They've certainly calmed the fan base. And I think my favorite pick of them, obviously, there were two. There was Simpson, the linebacker, to get him in day three. I thought, you know, it's a weaker linebacker class. We knew it, but to get him there. And I love the USC tackle Voorhees that they drafted at the end. He had the ACL tear at the combine, and they've already said, look, this is a 24 pick. But I love when organizations show forward thinking, show that they have a plan beyond, I want to keep my job next year. And Baltimore is one of the organizations that does that at an extremely high level, and that's another example of it.
Mark, you mentioned that Mac Jones was 4 of 4 in the AFC East. I want to focus on the Dolphins here. Now, a lot of their draft was spent on a boat ride with Tom Brady, Bradley Chubb, and Tyreek Hill, but they only get four players, led by Cam Smith, number 51 overall, a running back, a tight end, and offensive tackle. Did they do enough to keep up with the Aaron Rodgers Jets and the Bills, who have been dominating this division for these past couple of years?
I mean, like you said, a lot of their draft capital was wrapped up in either previous decisions that they made via trades or, you know, the Tom Brady boat ride situation. So it's sort of similar to Buffalo in that, you know, there are other reasons that sort of hamstrung them into this draft process. And so they couldn't really do too much. I mean, it comes down to, can the offense under Mike McDaniel counterpunch next year? Because we've seen this before when you get an offensive-minded head coach, new scheme or whatever, defenses struggle with it year one, but figure it out in year two, and it's how quick you can sort of respond to the response to your schemes. And so that's going to be part of it. And Tua staying healthy is probably the biggest part of it, because, you know, say what you want about Tua. He's one of the most, if not the most, polarizing quarterback out there. And there are Dolphins fans that have the sort of, you know, list of people that have maligned Tua. I don't think my name is on that because I don't think I have maligned him, but, you know, others, friends of ours, their names are on that list. He's very polarizing, but he runs that offense extremely well. McDaniel created an offense catered to him, RPOs, quick decisions, let him be a point guard. If he stays healthy, they can be good. If he gets hurt again, we saw what that offense looked like without him.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to let our quarterback guru go without talking a little Hendon Hooker and the Lions here. I think it's a fascinating pick because people in Detroit are kind of wondering what the future is at quarterback. Jared Goff, they kind of have to make a decision on him, if not this season, next offseason, given that he only has 2 years left on his deal. Hendon Hooker is kind of a long-term project here. So are the Lions getting a long-term backup, or do you think they could potentially have their Goff replacement and know it by, say, next year?
I think it's the latter, Jeremy. I think he could be their Goff replacement. And I think what's fascinating is, you know, looking at the sort of transition he's going to have to make from an offense that, look, Tennessee's offense was explosive, prolific, but it's that sort of Art Briles. It's a sort of marriage of Art Briles' Baylor system and the air raid, where, you know, it made it a lot easier on the quarterback. There are a lot of one receiver half field reads that he had to make. And so one of the biggest questions, I know people asked about the age, people asked about the knee. I think the biggest question was, how can you get him from that offense to an NFL offense? Well, then you look at what Ben Johnson did like this past year with Jared Goff. You saw a lot of air raid stuff that Goff was running at Cal. I mean, he's shown, you know, an ability to sort of take what a quarterback did well in his college days and marry it to an NFL system. So my biggest concern, Jeremy, is how long is he going to be there? You know, because if the Detroit Lions make the playoffs, if they have the season that a lot of us think they could have and he gets a head coaching job, does that sort of throw a, you know, fly into the ointment of developing Hendon Hooker? Because I wrote at the time when the pick was made, this is a great pairing because you can take that sort of 1 year medical slash developmental redshirt because you have Goff. And if you decide at the end of next season because of finances, maybe he wants a big deal and you say, look, we're going to go with Hendon Hooker. There's a great way to sort of develop him with the offensive coordinator you have in place. But if he's suddenly head coach of Team X, that might change it. I think right now, looking at it, I think they're looking at Hooker as, yeah, he could be our starting quarterback in 24 if we decide to go that route. But what will the coaching staff around him look like? And will you have that same sort of brain trust in place that can bridge the gap from that Tennessee offense to an NFL Sunday in place by the time that decision is made and executed?
He is the one and only Mark Schofield, best friend of Lando Norris. Mark, thank you for taking the time to join us this morning. Right after you wrote how to watch the Miami Grand Prix, everybody can check out SB Nation for all your NFL, F1, and Ted Lasso work. I enjoyed that write-up that you guys put together. That was such a strong episode. You guys absolutely killed it. Mark, you're the best.
Guys, thank you so much. This was a blast. Have a fantastic day.
Oh, we will. Mark Schofield, have a great lunch.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Jeremy or Pete, I think the time is now to like point at the Lions and laugh. I don't know if you're like down to do that.
Yeah, you know what? We always wake up on, you know, after draft weekend and everyone has a consensus team that we're all going to make fun of. And what I'll tell you, Jeremy, and maybe this will allow you to smile, is it doesn't always pan out that the team that is lauded, like the Philadelphia Eagles, RJ, is the one that ends up with the best draft class. So who knows? You know, maybe Gibbs is a Hall of Famer, and it's going to look like a silly move for the first 11 teams to pass on him.
I actually thought about this when Mark brought up how many teams passed on Jalen Carter. It was, you know, technically 10 teams because the Texans picked twice that passed on Jahmyr Gibbs. So, you know, for just being literal here, you know, it's all
good, man. That is good. That's some great man.
But I think, Pete, you know, Jeremy took a shot at the Boston Bruins. I think the Lions had that kind of hold on football media. The Lions had this massive lead. I mean, this just the line to write the Lions playoffs, you know, run starts here was so long. I mean, I can't even describe the fervor that the Lions have had in the Twitter sphere. And Jeremy,
they're
that
lining up
just
so much jealousy
up in flames. I mean, what do you mean jealousy? The Cowboys are the most talked about team in the world. I mean, I'm not lacking in attention for the Cowboys.
Did you see that Cowboy personnel executive drafted his son? All right, I mean, there's nothing better.
Exactly,
nothing better. See, right.
So that being said, you know, you actually tweeted, Jeremy, when Bijan Robinson went to the Atlanta Falcons, you tweeted, whew, you were super happy. Only for, what was it, three picks, four picks, whatever it was later, for the Lions to take Jahmyr Gibbs out of Alabama, who people thought might sneak into the first round. But no, the Lions were not done. They then took, with their other first round pick, an off-ball linebacker, the most inefficient, you know, usage of first round picks that you could possibly have, a matter that they proved Jeremy on Saturday by trading away their former prized running back for nothing, for pennies on the dollar. You said that the Lions killed day three. I would love to hear the defense for the position that the Lions are currently in.
Well, I can't. I'm not going to sit here and defend about positional value. Like, I think right after they drafted Jack Campbell, I was like, Lions are putting a masterclass on not valuing position value at all. And they didn't. They truly believe in their guys. And I think that's something that, you know, you hear from teams when they make questionable decisions. Oh, those were our guys. Those were our guys. I do believe that Jahmyr Gibbs was going to go in the top 15, based on what I hear. So if the Lions wanted him, I think they had to grab him there and not wait until 18. But I also think their draft kind of got thrown into disarray when Seattle went with Devin Witherspoon at 5. I think that was their guy. I think that was their plans all along. And so that's why they traded out of 6 initially. It was just like, well, our top guys are no longer on the board. Let's get a little bit of draft capital and see what we can do. And so they did well there. Jahmyr Gibbs over DeAndre. Well, I'd argue they got plenty for DeAndre Swift, because I think that is a guy, first of all, on the last year of his contract, probably weren't going to get anything for him in free agency in terms of compensatory picks, because no one pays running backs at all. And he's an often injured guy. And so the Lions were looking for someone who could be that. If you remember in the first half of the season, the Lions were one of the best rushing offenses in the league. That was during like the 4-game stretch in which DeAndre Swift was healthy. And that's about all you'll get out of DeAndre Swift every single year. 4 years of him being potentially that one awesome guy. And then just the injury hits. And he's just the type of back that can't avoid the injury, that can't play through it at full efficiency. And so I think the Lions were smart to trade him. Now, would I replace him with a first round prospect? No, I think they probably could have gotten someone like A-Chain in the 3rd round. There are other running back prospects who I think bring a similar skill set, and most of them didn't go until the 3rd round. You know, Ty J. Spears is another one. And then linebacker, I don't know, man. I didn't love the pick. Again, you look at like the rest of the linebackers, I think they all went in round 3. So you either read that as no one else values these linebackers like anyone else does, like the rest of the class, I mean, or the Lions had a huge reach on a positional that no one had any interest in drafting in the first 2 rounds. I do think they did rebound well. You look at Brian Branch in the middle of the 2nd round. He's a guy that a lot of people thought would go in the 1st round. I really like Sam Laporta as a tight end. And the one thing that I do admire about the Lions draft is this was a top 5 offense last year, and they decided, you know what? We're not going to sit it with our hands in our pocket. We're going to get even better on offense. And I think that's something that the Chiefs have done in the past too. Like, oh, we have the number 1 offense. Like, let's continue to like cycle through some better players. And so they upgraded running back, and they got themselves a new tight end weapon. So I don't, the whole, like the big picture of it, I don't hate. I just don't love the necessary uses of those first round picks.
I just picture Dan Campbell, like one of your dynasty fantasy league friends, looking at his app and it's like, I'm gonna shock them by taking Gibbs. And then with the Campbell pick, it's like you ran out of time. It's like, all right, I'm gonna take this guy because I like him. It's like, well, you could have got him with other picks.
The Sam Laporta pick is nice, Jeremy. I agree. There is the like, well, passing on Michael Mayer, you know, is an interesting move wrinkle that will kind of hover for a little while.
Hey, go get your guys. Go get your guys.
I mean, it's a little bit fun for me because I hate when people jump onto something and then present it as an original idea. That's why I hate the Lions right now. I hate the people that are like, oh, I don't know, man. I'm telling you, the Lions are going to make the playoffs this year. We know. Like, we all know that the Lions are good. We can all, like, we don't have to keep acting like it is our own original thought. It's a shared opinion. That's the thing that I hate the most. So, apologies that you have to bear that.
Well, the Lions are an under-the-radar team that might make some waves this year. I don't know if you guys know that.
So, if it isn't obvious, I have the Lions as a loser. Let's kind of fly through some winners and losers then. Pete, who is a winner or loser? You can go positive or negative. The world is yours.
So I'm going to, you know, I guess piggyback off what Mark was saying, and I know that this is going to make RJ mad. So I'm going to lean in. I thought the Colts did a nice job, right? They had a lot of players in this draft. They had a lot of draft capital. They take their swing, and where the Lions are taking their swing and they're getting made fun of for it, I think the Colts are getting praised for going and getting your quarterback of the future. And then you just see them taking players that address needs right now. And it seems like, especially the early part of the draft, they were taking guys that they believe that can really contribute next year, like Julius Brents at number 44. They get Josh Downs, who a lot of people like, at number 79, a wide receiver. Offensive line, defensive line, another cornerback, a safety, a tight end, a running back, an edge, a cornerback, a tackle. I just think, look, not every pick that they made is going to be a hit, but they get their quarterback. I think, we'll see here, but I think we're heading to maybe two seasons in a row where the starting quarterback is going to be the same guy potentially in 2023 or 24-25. And no, I know you don't like him and RJ, but I like Chris Ballard. I think he's had a tough go, especially at the quarterback position.
The hell out.
He's been throwing darts for a long time, and I like that this probably buys him a year to 2 years to 3 years to maybe figure this thing out. You know, it can fairly be argued that he's already had too much time, but I like the guy. I think he's a smart football man, and this definitely, I think, buys him at least that 2024 season to try to write this shit.
Jamie, where did Chris Ballard work before Indianapolis?
Don't put me on the spot like that. It is
Kansas City. Let's all be a little bit. Yeah. Let's just lay our cards out on the table.
Well, look, I don't know if that has anything to do.
I don't know if you know this, Jeremy. Pete was a big fan of Matt Nagy, Doug Peterson. And now Eric Bieniemy. I mean, everybody's a big fan of Eric Bieniemy. That's a cool one. But you know what I mean? Like
the Jags and the WFT are going to the playoffs.
Oh, Alex Smith. Pete was all in on. I wonder why. Look, here's the thing.
Better than Tony Romo.
Chris Ballard said one thing that highly annoyed me on Friday morning. because everything he says like kind of annoys me. This was like a special thing. He said, well, you know, I tell you what, Anthony Richardson was our guy all along. For real? The guy you took in the first round that you're presenting to the media is the guy you wanted the entire time? No way, dude. That's just what a coincidence. The Colts are so annoying. I hate everything about them. I can't stand them. I do love the Josh Downs pick. I love the Tommy Adebowari pick. I agree with you, Pete. I mean, but like, I do feel like the Colts are walking tall and mighty, Jeremy. Like, oh, wow, look at us. We have a first round quarterback. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who would have thought that like the best way to invest the most important position in the game is spending the most premium resources on it? Like, what a weird thing that landing your quarterback in cast off free agency is kind of the best way to do it. Like, the Colts are acting like they should be heralded for doing the thing that everyone's been saying they should be doing for a half decade now.
So you get upset. You get triggered by people saying things that are obvious.
I think so. It's that's what I'm working through. Yeah.
I will say, like, Anthony Richardson was one of those prospects where it really felt like it could go either way on draft day, where it felt like maybe he goes there at four, maybe he goes there at two, maybe he drops down into the 20s or into the second round. And so there's a slight bit of, praise to go around for being courageous enough to take that swing, given that he is kind of a boomer bust candidate.
I'm sorry, Jeremy, but like, what was their other option? Like, you know, like Stroud was gone, Young was gone. Like, so is that or Levis? Like, they didn't really have an option in my mind.
Yeah. I mean, the only other option, I guess, would be to trade up or trade down and either be more aggressive and get Stroud or be less aggressive and maybe get some additional draft capital, maybe jump into 2024. If you're like, you know what, he's not our guy. Let's load up on draft capital and try to do it again next year.
I do love that, and I know you probably hate this as well, RJ, but I do love that Jim Irsay is now not only clearly insane, but also just really active on Twitter.
At least he's entertaining. Messing with people. Like, I'm fine with that, because like at least it's entertaining. Chris Ballard is like, how come you guys aren't gassing me up the way you're gassing up Howie Roseman? Did you not see? I took the quarterback that fell to four, and it was the most obvious consensus decision. Give me my props.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jeremy, who do you think won or lost? I mean,
I'll try to keep it positive because I feel like you're trying to bring everyone down here. I really like the Seattle.
You brought
Seahawks.
Up the Bruins.
The Bruins, baby.
The Seahawks. I would straight up trade the Lions draft for the Seahawks draft, honestly. And part of that is Devin Witherspoon, like I had mentioned before. I think I did not expect them to make that pick. That was a surprise pick, but I think it was the right pick for them. And I think it's super telling that of all the teams that passed on Jalen Carter, they were one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that has me scratching my head a little bit about his future, but
Jeremy, sorry to cut you off. Witherspoon is clearly your great white buffalo. You're going to be watching his career and wishing he was in Lions blue.
100%. And I know in that Seattle defense, he's going to be really, really good, but then they beat the rush on wide receivers. They get Jackson Smith and Jigba. They were the first in the line of four to get the best wide receiver in the class there. And then Zach Charbonnet, he's gotten comparisons, and I know it's not fair to compare people to Hall of Famers, but he's the next Marshawn Lynch, man. I think he's a perfect fit for their physical run game, which they never seem to go out of style with. And so I think, you know, just those three out of those top four picks, I think were really, really solid. And then you get what, six or seven day three picks that you can kind of take swings on. I think that was a solid overall draft for a Seahawks team that I think is going, I mean, you want to talk about a sneaky NFC team. I think the Seahawks are one of those teams that could sneak in and surprise some people.
Jeremy, we did a show a few weeks back where we were talking about like things and teams hiding in plain sight, and you got to the Steelers before I could, and I was so mad, and I'm really mad that you got here before I did, because I think the Seahawks are winning the NFC West next year. I'm mm-hmm. such a fan. I love this draft. My love for he's my white whale, P. Jackson Smith and Jigba, and you know, I obviously wanted him for the Cowboys, but even in thinking about it, it was like, well, where's he going to play? Because obviously everybody wants to relegate him to the slot. Something I asked him about. I know I didn't plug enough last week, all the interviews I did, but I did sit down with Jackson Smith and Jigba. And he said, oh, like, of course he said he can play anywhere, whatever, blah, blah. But you know what you can do in Seattle? You can just play in the slot because DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett can handle things on the outside. And something I was thinking about was like, we've seen the Seahawks kind of have this, like everybody gives the Ravens, and I'm all backing on the Ravens, but like they're this smart front office. They're always successful. The Seahawks are that. Like the Seahawks are never really, you know, down and out. And they were kind of hanging with the Niners in that wild card matchup, obviously, you know, this past season. And so, but now with DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and Jackson Smith and Jigba, I think if we define the Seahawks kind of run as the like Pete Carroll era, maybe Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson era, this is the best wide receiver trio they've ever had. I mean, because they made hay with like what, Jermaine Kearse and Golden Tate and Doug Baldwin. Like they are back. I am so in on the Seahawks, Pete.
Yeah, I like what Seattle is doing, and
not as much as Jeremy, but right. Mm-hmm.
I like that they're letting Geno and leaning into Geno, and what that has allowed them to do is go and address other positions. And it's an NFC West that seems to always be fluid and always be changing. But you know, I think Seattle of the four teams is always the one that knows where its feet are, in a way, if you know, that's a saying, and stays grounded and builds slowly. And you know, I think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with in that NFC West, where you know, you had that Rams Super Bowl, but you really sacrificed a lot of the future, where it's like, you know, we're going to stay the course here and we're going to be a problem for you guys every single season. And I think that the draft was this year was indicative of that.
I think I've only listed losers so far, so I would like to list a winner. This one's pretty obvious, but the Houston Texans, obviously, get the quarterback of the future. I was going to be really mad as just like a football fan if they went at this again with these high premium assets and didn't do it again. So I love that they got TJ Stroud. I love the trade for three. I agree that they overpaid, but I do appreciate, Jeremy, the craftiness. And I think some people are trying too hard to give them credit, but they did, by taking Stroud at two, diminish the value of that third overall pick, because everybody thought obviously the Tennessee wanted to trade up for Stroud. Had they taken Anderson first, then there could have technically been a larger bidding war. So I love that they negatively impacted a division rival in the Titans. And I love that they forced the hand. They forced the Colts to have to settle for Anthony Richardson as well. So I feel like the Texans really kind of defined the future of the AFC South a bit. I love that they brought Tank Dell back. I think I speak for everyone. It's so great to see John Metchie healthy. And so like the Texans are kind of, whoa. I mean, you know, I do think they could put up like 50 points in like week three and we'd all be like, whoa, where did this come from, when it was all kind of right there?
Yeah. I mean, I like the aggressiveness, to be honest. This is a team that obviously has a lot to improve upon, but you can go about that two ways. You can trade down and gather a lot of picks like Arizona did. And I think it was smart for Arizona to do that. Or you can just go and get yourself two blue chip players, one on each side of the ball. And I think that's a really, really smart thing to do. And I thought Mark made a good point. Like this is two very safe picks on both sides of the ball. You get CJ Stroud, that double, where it's like that high floor player where you're pretty sure you're going to have a top half of the league quarterback of the future, if not a you know, an elite guy. I think his accuracy is insane. And so you got to be happy about that. And then you get Will Anderson, a guy who might not be like a Joey Bosa type, but he is going to be like that 10 second year player where you're making a difference on that side of the ball. And so, I don't know. I think sometimes we overthink it a little bit and like, well, that's, you know, they didn't get the right pick number. And you look at these charts and they actually lost the trade. Like, no, just go get really, really good players and build your franchise around that. So I don't think Houston is going to wow the AFC South this year, But they're well on their way to actually improving, which I feel like they've just been kind of running in quicksand for a while now.
The Texans could have approached Lions territory if they had just passed on the quarterback and taken Will Anderson and then sat there with what was it? It was 12, right? Yeah. Where they traded up from. And instead,
which was the pick that Detroit ultimately
wound they up with. They called their shot, and they, you know, when we look back at this 3 or 4 years from now, they may have gotten the best quarterback and a force to be reckoned with in Anderson, and it could change their entire franchise around. And so I think we can only know so much 2 to 3 days after the draft, but as far as believing in your process and taking game changers and getting both of them, this was a move where you're right. There was an overpayment with the deal with the Cardinals, but at the same time, it's like they've been at the bottom of the barrel for so long. And I think what this signified right at the beginning of the draft was them creating some kind of like light where you can start to see, okay, maybe we can get out of what has just been extreme darkness dating back to the days when Deshaun Watson was just standing there and yelling at reporters.
Jeremy, give us a loser because you went winner last time.
Somebody yeah, who you I, hate. I'm going to go with a team that everyone is like they're on the rise, but I just feel like they didn't do enough this weekend. That's the Jaguars. They decided to kind of like sit on their hands this draft and maybe continue to draft to trade down and down and down. They had 10 day three picks and decided, you know what, let's not package any of that to maybe get an actual talented player. Let's just take a bunch of lottery picks. I don't get it. And even with those, you know, the day one and day two picks, you got Brenton Strange, the sixth tight end off the board in the second round. You got Tank Bigsby, the seventh running back off the board in the third round. It feels like they were a little bit too passive in this draft, and they ended up missing, like you talk about that run on wide receivers. They missed out on the run of tight ends. They missed out on the run of running backs. And so I just like for a team that we all viewed as on the rise could really take a huge step into being an AFC contender this year, I thought they were going to be a little bit more aggressive to be a better team right now. And instead they just took a bunch of lottery tickets. And I don't know if that was the play I would have made.
I agree. I think that the Jaguars benefited from a crummy AFC South last year. I mean, they earned what they did, and the comeback obviously was fun. And they were the better team than the Chiefs that day, and Pete knows that. But yeah, like it does feel like they feel a little bit content to just kind of rest on their laurels and maybe kind of ride the bad division another year in a row. And I suppose there's logic within that. But Pete, it does feel a little bit passive for a head coach who's known to be a little bit more aggressive.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that it could have been a situation where they go and get more, but I don't know. It's hard for me to call them a loser because I think they were already a year ahead, and I just think that they're continuing to add ingredients to what's already a pretty good soup. It's not like people forget the Jaguars were in the postseason, right? So it's not like they are that far away from being a true contender. So I don't know if I would call them a full loser. I see where you're coming from, but I like what Jacksonville is doing just in general. And maybe what the bias here is, you know, I'm kind of looking even past the draft and what they were able to do last year. I don't think they needed much because I think they're a lot closer than people think that they're somehow too, you know, like we were talking about, oh, everybody's on the Lions. I think somehow the Jaguars are still hiding in plain sight in a lot of ways. And so I don't know how much they needed to do in this particular draft.
Pete, do you have a winner or a loser? I mean,
yeah, let's talk about the Chicago Bears. Ooh. And what they were able to do. You know, they are a team that is, I think very clearly rebuilding, but they do have the quarterback, which we all love to watch. I still think that, you know, you can make a true case that Fields is the most exciting player to watch in the NFL. And with the 10th overall pick, they go and get Darnell Wright, who you can slot in probably at right tackle. And then they go and they say, we're going to continue to build defense, right? Because they've been adding pieces through free agency and trades on the offensive side of the football. So they go defensive tackle, cornerback, defensive tackle before drafting a running back at 115. So I just think, again, now you're trying to really identify real under the radar teams where everybody is on the Lions. I think the Bears are one of these teams where you could look at the end of 2023 and you're like, wow, they made one of the wild card, you know, spots there. They were working a year ahead. I, I think when you have the quarterback in place and he's as exciting and as explosive as Fields is, and you start to have that good young core defensively, that's when maybe you can get a surprise 10-7 record and sneak in the playoffs. And then, and so I really like what the Bears did with their draft class.
Jeremy, are you worried?
Well, I had them as one of my winners as well. So maybe, I mean, I'm not worried this year, but you know, down the line, absolutely. I think Pete's right on the money there. I think wild card is probably their ceiling. I think they're probably more like a 7-10 team this year, but they had a lot of needs on the defensive side of the ball. They go pick up a couple free agency linebackers, and then the one thing that I still think they're missing is pass rush, but beefing up in the middle there with Gervin Dexter and Zach Pickens, I think they're got a little bit more versatility along that defensive front. They got a little bit better. And yeah, adding Tyreek Stevenson's in the secondary is going to help a already extremely young secondary get a little bit better, get a little younger as well. And so I think they're starting to form that foundational core that, like, I just think they're a year behind the Lions. This is a team that is building very much like I feel like the Lions did last year. And so, yeah, they could be one of those darlings that just barely misses out in the playoffs like the Lions did.
They took a lot of the sexy positions. Like, they had sections there that I really liked, like Tyreek Stevenson, Roschon Johnson, Tyler Scott. Like, I really liked a lot of those players, and they wound up with all of them. So the Bears are now my favorite team in the NFC North. Sorry, Jeremy. I have one last winner, and then if you guys have one you want to do, I'm fine. If not, Rachelle can tell us her winner or loser. I think the New York Giants won in a very methodical way. They didn't have like a big flash, you know, move or anything like that, but they take Deontay Banks. Don't know what that secondary is going to look like. Adoree Jackson's probably, you know, done after this year with the Giants, so you kind of feel that need for the future. John Michael Schmitz, they had a question mark at center, so you address that, and then you get Jalin Hyatt, and to get him at 73, when a lot of people thought, you know, before this entire draft process started that he would go in the top 10, maybe he'd be the first receiver off the board. I mean, they really need some help at the skill positions. They've obviously got Daniel Jones for the long term. Saquon's on the tag, whatever. I mean, I think it's a bummer because for a long time, the Giants have just been an afterthought in the NFC East, and they're really kind of starting to act like adults, Pete, and that really bums me out.
Yeah, I like the Giants draft, and I think you're right where it was, I think, a little bit erratic, maybe personnel staff-wise in years past with some of the decisions they would make it. And for the first time, I think with Daboll, feels like they have a true plan for the future, and they're just making a solid up and down roster. And right, you have the NFC champions and the Philadelphia Eagles. The Dallas Cowboys, I thought, did a nice job with their NFL draft. And you got Eric Bieniemy, who's spicing up the WFT again. So I think, annoyingly enough to the rest of the country, the NFC East is going to be fun to watch again. And I see it being one of the better divisions in football once again this year.
That's
beautiful,
is
isn't it, Jeremy?
No, not at all. Go Giants, though.
How dare you? I'm rooting for the Lions. I just hate that everybody else is doing it and acting like they're the only ones to do it. Wow. Does anybody have a flower or a demerit that they would like to hand out before we chunk deuces? Speaking of deuces, Deuce Vaughn, Dallas Cowboys pick. His father is a scout for the Dallas Cowboys. His father called him. It was a big story.
I do want to bring some attention to the beginning of the draft. And just how Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce really have leaned into the Chiefs being the most hated team in football this year. This was the heel turn of the century with the entire world watching. And I think this is what I think. I think the beginning and the end of the draft with rolling out the Lombardis at the end and the beginning of allowing Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce to show up with the Lombardi felt very black and white Hulk Hogan-esque. And I tend to think, yeah, the teams in the league always want to beat the reigning Super Bowl champions. But I thought this was a lean into one of those villainous WWE style heel turns, just rubbing it in everybody's face. And look, good for them. I think it's a cool time to be a Kansas City Chiefs fan. But I felt like it was a heel turn of sorts.
Jeremy,
I don't know.
Let me set you up like this, Jeremy. Yeah, because this is a straw man argument to me. Like, they're the first team to host the NFL draft as the reigning Super Bowl champions. So it's not like there's precedent for this. I actually thought it was dumb that they didn't bring out both Lombardis because they've won two and it's kind of part of this story. So I think that, you know, like, Chiefs fans are a little insecure in, like, well, everyone hates us, like, because we're the best. It's like, no, like, I think we all just acknowledge the Chiefs are very good and Patrick Mahomes is the best. And, like, we can all accept and live with it, Jen.
I mostly agree with what you said, but I think there is a little bit of like, okay, you're starting to wear out your welcome a little bit. Like, okay,
yes, that's what I mean. I think
right, and I think it's just I think people just are annoyed by dynasties in general, and we've already had a long conversation about whether the Chiefs are a dynasty or not. But for a league that just always calls itself like, oh, we're the league parity, any team has a shot any year. So if you see that same team coming up and up and up, and like you see Travis Kelce spiking the Lombardi Trophy on a stage over and over again, you're just like, okay, we get it, guy. Like, you guys are good. Can you shut up about it now a little bit? But it's not like a disrespectful thing. Like, I think everyone respects them as like, okay, they're really good. Like, no one thinks you're a bad team. You're just like, now you have the confidence to, and like the confidence has now gone to cockiness. And I think that's where it starts rubbing people the wrong way.
And it's hard for, I'm in a weird position, right? Cause I cover the team and I just feel that at the beginning of the draft, the NFL draft, though it was in Kansas City, and I get all that. I mean, it's more about the league than about one team. And I just thought the beginning, I mean, I don't know. And I live here. I think from the outside looking in, it for me, it felt a little bit much to even welcome them on stage and have them sort of rile up the Kansas City fans. It's not about like draft weekend. It's not about Kansas City. It's about every team and building the league. I don't know. That's just how it came off to me.
I will say two more things. And then Jeremy, if you have any weird quirks, we can get to them. Again, I kind of hate like things presented as original that aren't. That's really my thing, Jeremy. So like, I love Travis Kelce, Hall of Famer. Like, in no way this is like a qualm with Travis Kelce. But like, we've kind of seen like the extent of the like rah rah wrestle, you know, like mania mantra. Like, now we're like, and I'm not like offended by the slamming of the Lombardi Trophy, but it's like, you know, it feels a little played out. You know what I mean? Like, whoa, Travis Kelce did something intense. I can't believe it. Wow, I'm shocked. You know, so I'm a little bored is maybe where I'm at with the Chiefs, Pete, but I certainly recognize their greatness. The other thing is on the subject, Drew Pearson was the first person to get all rah-rah with a draft pick when coming out to announce it. I'm done with this. I'm sorry. I want everyone to have their moment. I don't need, you know, an ambassador for a team to come out in a round and take 3 minutes for a pick when we're all waiting on the clock to hurry up. Like, I'm out. I don't need this anymore. Like, you want to, you know, tweet out the clips and put them on the internet, fine by me, but make the draft itself a little bit more efficient. Those are my two cents.
Kyle Brandt, it seemed like that was the end of the rah-rah, right? He was the last one. Not that I thought it was not fun. I actually enjoyed the Kyle Brandt thing, but like, I don't think anyone is going to do it better than that. And it felt like whoever did it next at that point was going to be the jumping the shark moment. And I completely agree with you. I think the idea of them riling up the opposing fan bases that happen to be there, it's just way overplayed at this stage.
Yeah. Didn't they have like social media influencers up on the stage during the second round? That to me is like, okay, the draft is over. Just make it a Twitter event at this point. Like,
to this point, when Drew Pearson did it, which is to your point, Pete, it was in Philadelphia, so he was like getting booed, right? Because, you know what I mean, like there was a natural like cause and effect. Like, we can't just like, you know, do this like Pete Sweeney walking out and being like, everyone hates the Chiefs now, this is the most, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, you know, we're good. So Jeremy, do you have any weird quirks?
No, but I do want to say that the Vikings had a bad draft too.
Oh, well, dude,
just keep it an NFC North show.
Like, they stink.
They
do got Kirk Cousins.
I think this team might be a bottom five NFC team next year. Like, whoa, they might go from whatever 12 win team to
from burst to lurst.
Yeah,
is
what
you're saying.
They had a mass exodus in free agency. They didn't have a lot of draft capital, and I mentioned that wide receiver run in the first round. They were at the bottom of it. They had to sit and watch three wide receivers come off the board before they made their pick, and they get Jordan Addison out of USC. Not a bad player, but I think it's probably not the guy that they wanted, and they didn't have another pick until the third round. So I think they're a team that is going to see massive regression. They were already pegged to be one of those teams because of their ridiculous record in one score games.
They created an art and something that RJ would like. It was a three letter school draft. USC, USC, LSU, LSU, BYU, UAB. Very three letter clean. RJ, I'm surprised you didn't point that out.
Because I don't care. Like, they've lost me. I'm so out on the Vikings. Like, I'm so like, I'm disappointed in the Bills, but like, at least can recognize that they're still very talented. Also, to your point, Jeremy, they didn't even get rid of Dalvin Cook or Za'Darius Smith. Like, they're still like, hey guys, Anybody want these players? We'll totally train them. Like, it's just complete and total failure on their part. I'm out. I do think it's cool. You mentioned the three-letter schools. I think so. Everyone knows that Philly has like a million Georgia players. The Cowboys took two Michigan Wolverines. So, Jeremy, I'm surprised you're not a big fan. And the Chargers wound up with, was it three TCU players? So, I kind of like, you know, the collection of certain teams. Like, that's kind of cool to me. But.
So you like that the Lions drafted two Iowa Hawkeyes and two Alabama Crimson Tide.
Yeah, well, they drafted an Iowa tight end after getting rid of their last one. So, I mean, you know, that's okay. Wow. Rachelle, will you please join us? And first of all, calm this down, because we're all...
Jeremy Sweepstakes is what we call this section of the podcast.
Then will you tell us a winner or loser that you had? And then, of course, the coveted MF double MVP. And Mark is eligible, as are you, as always.
Okay. I did want to throw up my thoughts also on Travis Kelce. Love him. He has swag to him. He's just a really cool person. But I am kind of starting to feel like he's a person who does stuff just for reaction.
Thank you,
like, Rachel. Lately, I'm kind of like, he's doing a little too much. Mm-hmm. Put down just a little bit.
He's doing the most. Travis Kelce is doing the most.
So I'm like, all right, you know, put down. You're just trying to get a reaction at this point. So I just want to throw my, you know,
go
two
off,
cents.
Queen.
Yes. My winners and losers, I first have to shout out head coach Kirby Smart. I think that he deserves to be a winner because he now has his like reached a milestone with having like his 50th player drafted in only 7 years since being a head coach. And he passed Nick Saban and Sweeney. And so I thought that he deserves to be a winner just for the success he's had with the Georgia Bulldogs.
Herbs.
Yes. Also, Carolina Panthers. I think that they deserve to be in the conversation when it comes to winners. Definitely locking up their franchise quarterback and surrounding him with the necessary tools and weapons that he needs to be successful, getting an offensive lineman and also getting a wide receiver in Jonathan Mingo. When looking at the losers, I selected an individual. And I don't think this one is very surprising. Head coach for the Arizona Cardinals, Jonathan Gannon. I think he deserves to be a loser free draft weekend. Just starting off, how he's handling things. Like, the season hasn't even started. And I feel like if I were the Arizona Cardinal players, just watching how things have panned out with him talking about like how the Philly media was, you know, what they were asking him and the stuff that they were saying to him, coming up with just weird lies, and now like the tampering issue. And then he didn't even speak to any of the reporters the entire draft weekend, which to me is like, why? Like, what are you hiding? What else is there that needs to come out? And so if I were the Cardinals players, I personally would be kind of looking at him with a side eye, just like, I don't know if I can trust you. You're starting off on the wrong foot. But to today's notes, I really, really, really did like Pete's Chicago Bears winner. I don't think you had a loser. I know you said the Colts.
I think everybody.
Not a balanced draft. Not a balanced effort.
You had two winners. Everybody wins. I don't think you had a loser.
What?
But Jeremy, you had a really strong point on the Jacksonville Jaguars. I thought that was really, really solid. Just how you talked about them being a little bit too passive. Kind of like, what are they doing? Missing out on tight ends and running backs. I like that point that you made. And also, I really like the bold take you made about the Vikings, how you think that they could possibly be a bottom five team in the NFC. When it came to RJ, I think all of your points were solid. Like, I liked every single one that you made, honestly. It was probably between, I think the Giants was like a, low-hanging fruit, possibly. They did a really, really good job. They deserve a ton of credit. But my favorite was probably the Texans that you made with them being super aggressive. And so today I'm going to give it to RJ.
Let's go!
Negativity sells.
Let's go. Look, I showed up. I played my heart out, and I won. I mean, you know what I mean? Did catering to the Ravens help me out? I don't know, but I know how to play the game. You guys don't. Some people are saying I'm the Howie Roseman of the SB Nation NFL show, and that's what this is really all about. Jeremy, you and I, we're going to go out in the Winners Club. We're going to have a lunch there. You, me, Rachelle, maybe I'll have a Capri salad. You can have the chicken. Rachelle, get a burger. Let's live a little bit. You know what I mean? We'll all have a good time. Nobody's going to run from this fight the way that Pete Sweeney just did. Wow. Jeremy, do you want to say anything? I'm assuming Jeremy is the silver medalist, Rachelle.
No question. Listen, we know T team shouldn't draft running backs in the first round, but you're telling me that a guy like Kyle Shanahan, who aggressively went after Christian McCaffrey, who some are saying is the lesser Jahmyr Gibbs.
Ooh.
If he does that, is Dan Campbell really wrong to get Jahmyr Gibbs at 12 overall? Think about it.
Rachel, who would you rather have, Jahmyr Gibbs at 12 overall or Deuce Vaughn at 212 overall? I mean, that's all I'm saying. Look, I just want to thank the Cowboys for the content that will live on.
That was sweet.
It was like awesome content, but it was really, really, really cool. We had pulled up the War Room feed in that moment, and when they handed Chris Vaughn the phone to do it, it was just such a cool moment. You don't get to see a lot of things like that. So, plus Kansas State kind of has Dallas Cowboys helmets. If you look at it, they're very similar.
And also Joey Porter Jr., didn't he?
Oh, that was super cool too, that he wound up with the Steelers. That was probably cooler, if I'm being honest, than the Deuce Vaughn.
No, it wasn't. I think the other one was cooler for sure.
Well, look, I mean, the fact that his dad got to call him is what made it cooler. But like, if we're talking about just the situations that Joey Porter Jr. gets to play for the team his dad won a Super Bowl with, is pretty cool.
Fair.
Wow. Where did they win that first Super Bowl, Jeremy?
You're really throwing trivia. I don't know. You're asking Lions fans for Super
You're
Bowl
sitting
trivia?
There. You're sitting there right now. It was at Ford Field.
Detroit.
Okay.
I don't know if it was Ford Field at the time. I don't know how long the
Wait, you say the Steelers?
Yeah, that was
a Ford Field. That was Ford Field.
I know it was in the building. I don't know if it was called. Maybe it was called Pizza Hut Arena or something like that.
It's always been Ford Field.
Or Little Caesars. What is it? Little Caesars. What is it called?
Little Caesars Arena is the basketball and hockey.
I can't believe they ruined the Palace at Auburn Hills.
Right. Well, why wouldn't you call it Little Caesars Palace?
Right.
Low hanging fruit, right there.
Wow. Okay, let's get out of here with Jeremy telling us what the best thing to order at Little Caesars is.
Deep dish pizza. They do a decent Detroit style pizza, which is, as always, the most underrated style of pizza that too many people don't know about.
That was wrong. The answer is the hot and ready.
No, incorrect.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.